I play the long game a lot more now. So I used to think running was 100% mental. You got better from enduring more than any of your competitors. And I've developed over time this mindset that there's so much more to do with the prep work. And it's about getting a little bit better over a really, really long period of time so that you don't have to go into this place that your competitors can't, but instead you need to feel comfortable at a place where your competitors feel uncomfortable.
Welcome to the Heroic Minds Podcast, where we discover how to get out of our own way, unleash the full capability of our mind, become the hero of our story, and a hero for other people.
From an evolutionary perspective, we've evolved to manage threatening encounters.
I want to do everything in my ability to help them, but they make the call.
We have to do it in a way that doesn't just assume that going faster is going to be the cure-all.
When you suffer, and then you come out of it on the other side, you stand a little taller, your voice doesn't shake anymore, your eyes are always up.
Sorry to depress you guys. Self-doubt is par for the course. It's just how you choose to deal with them, react to them, or not react to them.
A little tough love goes a long way, and high expectation also goes a long way. But the more you expect of someone, the more they'll do.
I have to keep moving forward. No good comes from going back.
I don't need red tape. I'm not into rules. I'm not into regulation. I'm just going to do this.
Welcome back to the Heroic Minds Podcast. On today's episode, we have Ben Flanagan, an NCAA champion from the University of Michigan. There's a little soundbite of the University of Michigan Wolverines fight song for any sports fans, University of Michigan fans. I thought I'd throw that in there. All right, so Ben Flanagan, going into the 2018 10,000 meter men's outdoor NCAA championship race, and he goes in seated as the 23rd fastest runner out of 24 who qualified. Ben came out of that race victorious, the champion, with a time of 28 minutes and 34 seconds. 10 kilometers for our Canadian listeners. 10 kilometers in 28 minutes and 34 seconds. Today, Ben is a professional Reebok-sponsored runner and Olympic hopeful. In this episode, we dive into the mind of this long-distance runner and how it relates to life. How does one go into something they know will be uncomfortable and avoid getting caught up in their own head? How do you create a sustainable plan for improvement where your input may not be 100% every day, but your output is? How do you deal with uncertainty, especially in a sport that is so numbers driven? What doesn't work from the common narratives around motivation? Well, there are a lot, and Ben dives into them. How did Ben's parents change the script on how they motivated their son? How did his coach's feedback on the night before that big race give him everything he needed to succeed? One of my favorite topics discussed in this episode, and I've heard it many times on many podcasts, about how to get into a dark place or survive in that quote-unquote dark place to be successful. Well, Ben gives an answer that totally flips the script and is something I've never heard before. Last but not least, why is it that trying to will yourself through things, even in long distance running, doesn't work? All that and more in this fantastic, fully loaded episode. I'm flipping the script today on the True Local promo. I'm going to hand things over, actually, to someone that calls himself, self-proclaimed, the Heroic Minds Ambassador. His name is Graham Swan. He has supported the podcast and all my crazy ideas from day one, and I really can't thank him enough. But one day he told me that he could do a better job with the True Local promo than I do. So without further ado, here's the Heroic Minds Ambassador telling you about True Local.
Hey Ben, Swanee here, self-proclaimed brand ambassador for Heroic Minds. Just checking in this morning to say keep up the great work on the podcast. Interesting and inspiring guests with thought-provoking messages. In a word, terrific. Now that aside, I'm quickly ready to become a self-proclaimed brand ambassador for True Local. Since the pandemic started, the convenience of the home delivery, flexibility of the delivery intervals, and foremost, the quality of the product, my wife and I have been thrilled. We've gone from sea scallops to pickerel, bison burgers that we did on the grill that were just mouth-watering. We're recently back from a camping trip where we enjoyed grilled mango chicken breast winner. The thick cut smoked bacon in the mornings for breakfast, absolute winner as well. The opportunity to find recipes online. We tried the smoked boneless pork chops that were grilled, and then with the fresh peach salsa that we found the recipe online. Outstanding. So true local for me, the convenience of it, the quality of the product, terrific. I'd say check them out, give them a try. You'll be happy that you did.
All right, let's get to the episode.
How do you deal with the numbers that that is the sport? Like, to me, in other sports, there's points, and there's, you can even in hockey have an impact that isn't on the score sheet, and coaches and players know that. But in a sport like running, or do you just focus on the numbers all the time? Or how do you, like, to me, you'd want to get out of that headspace. What is your approach to the numbers game that is your sport of running?
Yeah, I mean, the best way to describe it is it's a blessing and a curse. You know, it's amazing to have a sport that's so quantitative that you can measure progress in certain ways. You can focus on analytics in certain ways, and all that information is so readily available, which is great. But, you know, there's a point where theory and practice, you know, where do you draw the line, right? And I think in my mind, where things can become troublesome is with overtraining. And if you focus too much on the numbers, neglecting your personal, you know, subjective experience to how you feel, how your, you know, how your running economy is doing, how your breathing's going, I think you can find yourself maybe putting too much stress on your body and compromising the quality of your work. So it's about finding that balance of like, okay, how do these numbers relate to my personal experience? Because if you can kind of find your own baseline and measure from that, that's where I think you can get a lot of positive data points that can help with progress. But if you compare yourself too much to others or focus too strictly on the numbers, sometimes you can get yourself into a little bit of trouble.
That just sparked about five or six questions in my mind. But before we dive into that, how did you get into running? I did some work, obviously, and I know you were a hockey player a little bit back in the day, which is always good to hear. But what got you into running? And then furthermore, what got you into an amazing school like Michigan, especially as a Canadian?
Appreciate that. Yeah. I was a hockey player growing up. Played when I was 5 years old. Played for the Kitchener Rangers. Junior Kitchener Rangers, that is. You know, I wish I actually played for the big boys like you did. So I grew up watching Kitchener Rangers games, big fan. So I loved hockey. I played a lot of different sports growing up, played baseball, lacrosse. My dad was super interested in getting me involved in as many sports as possible. And I would say I was generally average at everything. I was okay. But I loved sports. My sisters joined the cross country team at St. Mary's High School, and they loved it. For two people that weren't naturally, they didn't have any prints, and the biggest thing they had was a phenomenal mentor. So now, family friend Christina Sullivan was our coach at the time, and based on my sisters' great experiences and my, I guess, natural success relative to other sports in like our annual track and field meet, I tended to do pretty well. Between those two things colliding, I came out to practice for the first time to join my sisters, and just found myself falling in love with the sport. And, you know, as an athlete yourself, and all the athletes can relate, when you find yourself naturally, it was something that I was better at than I ever was any other sport. And that definitely fueled the fire a little bit. And I really just got into pursuing my potential and seeing how far I could take it. And one thing led to another. It was district meets, then regional meets, then national meets. And then it was trying to represent Team Ontario. And once I got to that level with again, a great mentor who is Christina Sullivan, another great coach, Pete Grinbergs, we started focusing on pursuing it at the collegiate level. And that's kind of what brought me to the NCAA, and particularly the University of Michigan. And I could go on forever in terms of how that journey went. But basically, it was just a matter of talking to people who knew a lot more about recruiting than I did and trusting them. So I honestly give a lot of credit to the support network I had to direct me in that path.
Awesome. And now, again, before we get into the civic mental side of your sport, I do want to focus on your education now and your plans for the future after sport, whenever that may be. It seems like you do have a bit of a plan for what you're going to do after, even though now you're a professional. What is your education in, and what, if running wasn't a part of your life, what do you see yourself doing?
Yeah, so I went to school and studied kinesiology originally. I got a bachelor's in kinesiology, bachelor of science. Again, something a lot of athletes can relate to naturally gravitating towards. I decided to, distance running is a unique sport because in the NCAA, technically you're part of three teams, which is cross country, indoor track, and outdoor track. And the only reason this becomes relevant is there's a term that's redshirting, which means you can sit out a season and come back for a fifth year. And considering you're on three separate teams, there provides a lot of opportunity to redshirt and come back for a final year. So long story short, I made the decision early on in my academic career that I wanted to take 5 years before I left the University of Michigan. That gave me the opportunity to pursue a master's degree, in which I did a master's of social work. Really, really cool experience. Opened up a lot of different perspectives for me on a lot of things that became a lot more important to me from that point on. So honestly, running was not supposed to work out as well as it did. I always wanted to be a professional track and field athlete, a professional runner, sign a shoe contract. But I mean, if anybody followed my career, my resume was not qualified to do that until pretty much my last collegiate race. And I got on a roll and it opened up a door for me. But before that, I was looking up rock climbing memberships I wanted to join, boxing, I wanted to try all these new things. I was really excited to go into some interpersonal social work in like a clinical setting. But yeah, now I'm fulfilling what was my dream for a long time to run at the professional level, pursue the Olympics. And after that, I would love to find a nice overlap of social work and athletics, because I think that's an area where I could hopefully impact a lot of people's lives.
Amazing. And it's obviously as you would already know, being from the sporting world, an area that's very much opening up right now, that the wall is almost, I would say, at least in my network, almost non-existent, that wall of the mental side of not only sport, but also of life and how those two interact and how athletes do need that support. You know, they're not immune to the adversities of life and the challenges that other people experience, which I think was a common theme for too long. And now people are realizing, okay, you know, athletes, doctors, first responders, we all kind of need that support and guidance. So if I ask the question about running, the mental side and the physical side, what is that, but the idea in your mind of the physical side versus the mental side of running, is it more of a physical thing for you or a mental thing?
It's amazing. That question, it comes up a lot. I get asked, especially by people who either are new to running or don't have a lot of experience in it, because, you know, a lot of times I tell people that I'm a distance runner. Sometimes the first response I get is, oh man, that sucks, because it hurts. You know, it can be pretty grueling on the body. And, I've been challenged by this question because my perspective has changed a lot over time. And the best way I can describe it is when I was a younger athlete, I was under the impression that the harder you worked, you got out of your sport what you put into it. And I think that's a very valuable lesson at a young age. But unfortunately, I ran into a point where I was doing too much. And, you know, to give you some more perspective on, you know, my career, like I've suffered a sacral stress fracture in my lower back, a stress fracture in my femur. So I just got myself into a bit of a cycle of getting injured because someone would tell me to run 90 miles, I'd run 95, et cetera. So what that allowed me to do is change my perspective on taking training to a more sustainable approach. And how this ties in with the mental aspect is I play the long game a lot more now. So I used to think running was 100% mental. You got better from enduring more than any of your competitors. And I've developed over time this mindset that there's so much more to do with the prep work. And it's about getting a little bit better over a really, really long period of time so that you don't have to go into this place that your competitors can't, but instead you need to feel comfortable at a place where your competitors feel uncomfortable. And it's a balance. And the physiological component is a lot more relevant to me now than it used to be.
It sounds almost as if you're in a bit of, it was a bit of a conversation with your ego that you had to deal with too. And now what was that process like? Cause I know that's not easy. And I wish I knew that when I was still training and working towards a hockey contract of some sort, because I did realize that that approach that you're speaking of when it comes to training, but also the skill side of the game, I had the same approach, was just do more than anyone else, and almost aimless at some points. It was just get that heart rate up as far as you can, farther than the next person. And then you take a step back and think, what the heck am I doing? What was that transition like? Was there a process you went through or that you still have to work through? I'm sure the ego doesn't disappear. What kind of keeps you on that trajectory?
You know, definitely a matter of hindsight's 2020 and trial and error. I just kind of flew too close to the sun, I guess is the cliche. So the best way for me to explain this in terms of running is when I was racing people, I wasn't known for having a kick, which is, having that burst of speed at the end of a long distance race, being able to go into a full out sprint at the end of a 10K. And I thought that people that were beating me in that way were digging to this place that I couldn't get to. And I've finally realized that all that was happening is they just felt better. Like their body was physically like feeling better than mine going into that last home stretch. And once I started to focus on that, the training turned into, okay, let's focus on the first 9,000 meters of this feeling relatively comfortable rather than trying to get this last 1,000 meters like to be as painful as possible. But a lot of that practice comes from coaching experience. My college coach was a three-time Olympian, Canadian record holder. So there was a lot of credibility there where I could ask him about his racing experiences. But getting injured was a huge part of it. Like when I got hurt, I just learned so much about myself, and having to come back from that and losing all your fitness and realizing how long it takes to progress back to where you were gave me a good perspective of like, okay, if I want to get better, it's a lot more to do with how long of a duration I can train consistently and avoid setbacks rather than being able to get 110% of myself every single day, if that makes sense.
Totally. I find that outstanding. And as this message from the podcast continues to shape itself, I'd be honest, this is almost what I was hoping the conversation would go into or become. Because it was interesting what you said there about feeling better during that last kilometer, as opposed to having some certain skill or a specific training regimen. It was more just, if you're feeling better, you can do more. And I think that's just a great example for anything, is that I think we love to overcomplicate things or work harder thinking that that's going to help. But really what you did was just rejig your training, your approach, so that simply if you feel better, those natural instincts and abilities within you are going to come out.
Yeah, that's where I would say the magic started to happen for me.
Did your approach change into that your year where you did become an NCAA champion? Was that, do you think that was totally due to your change in training, your approach, your mindset going into this idea of the pain and the struggle and redlining it constantly? Was that a direct correlation, or were there other factors as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely hard to say for sure, but I do think that had a really big impact. And, leading up to that, which was a major breakthrough for me, winning NCAAs, the buildup wasn't necessarily pretty ahead of time. I battled a couple injuries, a few months prior, and I think the context is really important. I got hurt to a point where I was just like so fed up with the sport. Like I was just like, I cannot string together the training routine that I want. And, I can't avoid getting hurt. Like it was becoming so frustrating to me that I became demotivated in a lot of areas. I used to spend, excess hours in the training room and, doing all these things that I thought were like the 1% changes. And on top of that, I was in an internship with my grad school program that didn't allow me to come to regular practice times. So here I was, instead of being at the track 5 hours a day, I was coming in, you know, focusing on really what was important, and that was the workout, you know, getting the best I could in that time frame, trying to recover in between, and then leaving the facility almost immediately to go to my internship. And although I don't think that's a setup for long-term success, I think it did allow me to really prioritize, like, okay, this is just about the running that I need to go well. And from that point on, workouts were just getting a little bit better. And as I started to see that progress, I started to just kind of build off of that. I was like, okay, here are the things that are working that I want to continue to focus on. And here are the things that I was giving a lot of attention to that I don't think made as big of an impact. And as I started to piece that together, things just got better and better. And then confidence came together and the momentum was there. And I just found myself in a situation where I was just in the best shape of my life going into that, that race. And, fortunately, everything just came together at the right time. And the last thing I needed was just confidence from my coach, which I got, and I was ready to roll.
That is incredible. In the magazine, it said you came into your big race as the 19th fastest runner and with a previous best finish of 14th place. But for whatever reason, that didn't bother you. And we opened up this conversation with the numbers game. So not only is there the numbers of your times, from what I've learned in the running world is you're always referenced by your placed finished as well, which is another number. How do you allow that, especially in a world where it's numbers everywhere? How do you push that aside going into a race?
Yeah, I mean, I think experience and maturity at that point in my career, you know, that was my fifth year of college, a lot of competitions on my belt. I think that definitely prevented me from getting overwhelmed by any sort of perspective like that, because I was at a point where I just understood where my fitness level was at, and I knew the competitors I was racing against, and I really did believe I could beat them despite not having any of the legitimate data points to back it up. But, you know, I knew what I was behind the scenes on the track. I knew the splits I was running in practice, and I like to tell this story because I do think it's great for, you know, athletes and coaches to hear. But the day of the race, I was almost like embarrassed or like insecure to bring up to my coach that I thought I could win, because it did seem somewhat outlandish, but that's how I felt. So I just kind of tossed it out to him while we were doing our pre-meeting conversation. I was like, I honestly, like, I might sound crazy, but I think I can win this race. And I was expecting him to basically like bring me down to earth and be like, hey, you've never been top eight, like, let's shoot for that. And instead, he just was like, yeah, I know. I think you can win too. And that conversation for me was just like, holy, like, I might act like I can win this thing. Like, I can actually do it. And so I don't know. I did need a little bit of that outside belief from, I guess, a credible source. So, I mean, from that point on, it's like whatever stats Joe Schmo is telling me about where I am in the field, like, I got me with my belief in myself. I've got my coach who I trust thinking that I can do it too. And I guess going in, that was certainly credentials I needed, I guess.
I'm glad you shared that story. It makes the old saying or idea that first you have to believe it before you can do it. It almost seemed like that was the vital step towards that incredible run, incredible race. That's fascinating. I know we're going to bounce all over the place, but while we're on the topic of your coach, I thought we'd dive into that. What role does the coach have even on race day? Like, what is it, more of a mental side? I picture in my own mind a running coach being more of a psychologist.
Yeah. I've been fortunate to have a lot of different, like, I've had a lot of different coaches throughout my career, and I'm fortunate that all of them have been they've been great coaches, and all influential in different ways, given the point of development that I was at. But honestly, I think the coach in a sport like running that is so, I guess the term that comes to mind is raw, because, you know, you don't have these added skill sets as you do like hockey, for example, where there's so much going on. You have speed, endurance, the physical component, the stick handling. In running, you're running, you know, and there are some nuances to it that you learn, but in general, like, there's so much more to the prep than there is to how much you can control on race day. So I do think there's a ton of different philosophies, and there's some coaches that do like to be hands-on, reading out your splits, telling you you're too fast, you're too slow, making sure you're sticking to the game plan. But for me, I've always found that when it comes to race day, like, it's pretty much on you. So I think, I personally think communication between your coach is the most important in the day-to-day training. Just being able to say, like, being able to be honest and, like, tell your coach when, you know, you're feeling too tired for a certain type of training, or you're feeling good that you can handle more than they're going to give you. I think having that communication channel is really important. I think trusting your coach is vital, because I really think you have to believe what you're doing in order to get the most out of it. And then aside from that, I think it's just, you know, formulating a plan on race day. But from my experiences, a lot of the plans don't really ever end up, you know, going according to plan. So it's like, I don't know. I've had moments where I've communicated with coaches on race day, and it can definitely build confidence. But and I think that's a big part of it. If the coach can continue to make sure you feel confident, that's good. But honestly, I think the transparency is the best, most valuable thing I got out about a lot of my coaching experiences.
Staying on race day, there are days when I go out and I don't feel, and I'm basically moving backwards at times, but nonetheless, I'm running. There are days, for whatever reason, my body just does not feel like it did the day before when I was running. My question to you is, has that ever happened to you? And if there are days where you're on the starting line and you just feel, oh, I don't feel right now, has that ever happened? And what is your process to deal with it?
Yeah, it totally happens. Happens to everybody. People have certain, you know, what's the word I'm looking at? Superstitions about, you know, oh, if I feel terrible before my race, that means I'm going to run best. You know, I don't think that's the best coping strategy, right? Because then all of a sudden you feel good, and that's not good. But but it totally happens to runners at all levels. Of just a matter of, it's hard to really explain, but just like, oh man, like things are just grooving. Like things are grooving today. I just feel good. For me, what I like to do in terms of not really, so the idea is, best case scenario, ideal, I'm in the best shape of my life. The way I describe being in really, really great shape and ready to perform is consistency. That means if I showed up to the track for practice and my coach said, oh, actually, we're running an all-out 5K, that my margin of error is still not going to be that large. That pretty much every practice I'm going to, I'm feeling so good that, like, I don't have doubts about my races anymore, because it's just like, all right, I've got this under control. I've gone a great, every workout has either been good or great. So my margin of error is so small. Whereas other times in my career where I either had compromised buildup or just poor training, or I got hurt and I haven't had much time to come back, that margin of error is really large, where it's just like one day you show up to the track and you're running great, and the next you can't even really get one foot in the other. And that's really hard. And I think that's what most you know, collegiate athletes experience, is not really getting to that point where you're consistently performing at the same level. So step number one is trying to get to a point where you're consistent, and then you don't have to worry about it as much. But let's say you do feel bad on race day. For me, what I like to do is think about other times I felt that way and challenge myself and be like, okay, I've felt like this before and I've raced great. So that doesn't mean I'm going to race great today, but it also doesn't mean that I'm going to race bad. I'm going to continue to feel this way. It's how I feel right now, and it doesn't determine anything about how the race is going to actually go. So I try to avoid making things relevant that don't have to be, because when I'm going out for warm up, I'm not racing yet. So I don't really have to worry about how that performance goes. So that by the time I'm on the start line, I'm not worrying about things that I don't have to, like my warm up or how I felt yesterday. And it's just go time, and I'm confident that I'm ready to, like, go from that moment on. Does that all make sense? I was a little all over the map.
No, it totally does. And I mean, it totally fits in with your whole training approach too, that if you want to train consistently and stay training, well, you can't train to a point where you have risk of injury, and it all comes full circle.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I do think, you know, having a great workout on Tuesday and a terrible workout on Friday, like I do think those are good points to take into consideration. Okay. Ideally you want your performance metric to be pretty similar, right? Or I mean, obviously somewhat improving at all times, but to me, it's like, okay, is this a sign of overtraining, right? Like, does that mean I went too hard on Tuesday or Wednesday and Thursday I went too hard? So a sign of true preparation and true like peak performance ability to me is just having no doubt and being able to perform on any given day. That to me is where you're recovering properly, you're getting quality sessions in, and mentally you're just minimizing any sense of doubt. And that's like a really, really cool place to be, but it's hard to get there.
I'm curious, are there any tactics through your career, I would say more on the mental side than physical side, that you, maybe they're in textbooks, maybe someone has told you, but they really haven't worked for you?
I've had one competition where I doubled, which means I was competing in two races, one race on Friday, one race on Saturday. And I decided I ran okay day one. Day two comes around and I don't feel good naturally because I just raced the day before. And my strategy then was, I'm not going to think about this at all. Like, I feel good. I'm just pretended that like everything was great instead of kind of like accepting the reality of the situation. Because I raced the day before, that's a pretty clear sign that my body's going to be a little bit tired. And I went into the race pretty much pretending that I didn't race the day before, like trying to like reset my brain that was like, oh, this is my first race of the weekend. And I think that was problematic because I did not feel good. I was tired and the race started and I felt bad and I was under the impression that I shouldn't feel bad. So that was just kind of this negative spiral that was like, okay, I feel bad. I'm not supposed to feel bad. This isn't going well. And I had a terrible race that day. So I guess the opposite of that is, I think acceptance is really important to really like, you know, if you don't feel good, okay, this is where I'm currently at and that's okay. I'm going to manage it rather than try to just like tough it out sometimes, because you know, if you try to tough it out in a world like distance running too often, like, you know, it'll beat you down. So I don't know if that necessarily answers the question. I'd have to give it a little more thought to think of some other like specific techniques or strategies that I might have learned through sports psychology or other things, but that's what comes to mind right now.
Again, bouncing back into the mind of running, I do want to get into I should find a better way to word this, but to me, the dark side of pushing your body to the limit and redlining. What has that experience been like for you? Has it ever brought up stresses in your life or things in your life that you needed to deal with that you didn't realize till you got to a point in running where you were like, a thought popped into your head? Because for me personally, that happens to me as I'll be running. I finally get out of my own head. I'm just like, thoughts are floating in and out. And a thought will kind of float in that's, wow, I should probably deal with that. I didn't know that was a stress. Has anything like that ever happened for you?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. It's, I mean, you definitely have to go, because up to this point, I've talked or I've spoken a lot about, you know, making things sustainable and, you know, trying to feel as good as possible. But inevitably, in a sport where your only objective is to go as hard as you can in a given distance, you know, you do have to go to a place that hurts. The idea is, I guess, prolonging it, you know what I mean? As long as possible so that you don't get to a point where it happens halfway to the race instead of three quarters. But, I mean, to me, I can't think of any specific instances where, you know, in the middle of a run, I was just like, I mean, I've had experience where I've just felt so defeated. Like if I'm just like having a terrible day and I'm trying so hard and it's just not going the way it's supposed to, it can definitely beat you up. And I guess sometimes that can make you question, you know, certain things about like, oh man, like, you know, what am I doing here? Right. Like, I'm dedicating so much time to this. Like, should I be focusing on other things in my life? Like I think the thing that this conversation brings up with me is that moment of just like absolute doubt in your sport can be pretty scary, because it's like the moment you realize how invested you are in something that you're uncertain of the return you're actually going to get out of it, because you can work as hard as you want and there's no given that you're going to actually reach your goals. So you hope to, right? So in my mind, that can be a pretty scary thought, just being like, okay, like what if this all doesn't go according to plan and I'm just trying as hard as I can at something that's not going to work out.
And now I'm going to give you the $1 million question then, which is hopefully your process of working through that, because I think that's especially for people changing careers or even through this pandemic, which is very timely. I've done all this work. I've gotten all these degrees. I've invested all this money, and who knows where things are going to go. So for you, when you're in the middle of that race and that thought does pop into your mind, or you're in the middle of training and that pops into your mind, what is your process to work through that, accept it, et cetera?
Yeah. In the moment, it's tough. I mean, I think it's something that I definitely unpack after the time. I would say specifically in a performance setting, you know, the goal is to just like, okay, like stay in the moment, deal with this later, you know, which isn't always the best coping mechanism. But in that particular type of environment, it's like, all right, you know, task at hand. But I think, because I've had moments where, you know, and especially as ironic as it is, before the biggest breakthrough I've had in my life was probably the closest I ever was to being like, man, I'm done with this. I don't want to do it anymore. And I think for me, talking with other people is the best thing for me. And that's just because I'm fortunate that I have a great support network, like my family members. And the actual examples that come to my head are like, if I had a conversation with my dad and I said, I don't want to do this anymore, that would be completely fine. And to have that validation that you want to change something up and it be okay to other people whose opinions you value a lot, is such a refreshing thing to hear. I'm just like, okay, I'm not stuck here. I don't have to be doing this. And these people who maybe I thought had the expectation that I'm doing this for don't actually care if I'm doing this or something else that makes me happy. And so I think that is incredibly powerful. And my dad has also told me, you know, after pretty much all of my best credentials, he would always tell me that, like, okay, if your career ended today, you could walk away from the sport incredibly happy. And like, don't ever forget that. So it's just, you know, hitting these checkpoints and being like, okay, I'm satisfied with where I'm at. I obviously hope for better, but I don't know. I really try to trust my current mindset and how I'm feeling about certain things in the moment. And, you know, trust that judgment, and in the times where I'm not certain of it, reach out to people who I really do trust and get their two cents on the matter, because that can also open up some other avenues to digest that.
That's fascinating. It's so relevant to the pressure that I had put on myself in sport that I think 100% affected my performance. And if you look at other athletes, I think they would say the same. And I think it comes down to being in a place of vulnerability. Like, if you're so invested in something and so far deep that you forget about the other things you can do or the other parts of life, that if it's not going well, what if I am investing all this, everything I've got into something and it doesn't work? Well, really, if you break it down, everything will be fine. But we're so far sucked into this idea that it's everything that we can kind of get in our own way. So I think that is, you know what, I've always shared that from my own experience and never knew if it was true. So it actually is quite cool to hear you say something similar, that you can get in that space where, wow, what happens if this ends? And then you're just thinking of hypothetics that don't really matter.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I think, and it's easier said than done, but being able to get to that place where you're like, okay, I do control over my life, and whatever I do here, in both case scenarios, it's going to be okay. I think it's a very, very powerful technique to just help you feel, you know, in control of your own life and just willing to accept the consequences of either action, I guess.
I have to ask, because you're going to shake your head because I'm relating to things that are so far off your caliber of the sport. Back in school, I remember the high points in my athletic career. So winning 400 meter in grade 7 is not something I'm just going to forget. I hope you know. So
yeah.
At certain points,
you should have never.
At certain points in a race, when you're feeling really good, how do you not let yourself get out of your tempo that you're supposed to be in for that length of race? How do you keep those emotions contained, controlled? Because I would, now that I'm learning these terms, I would probably get to my kick way faster than I should, and then it would catch up to me. What's your approach in keeping that composure at the opposite of what we talked about, a time where things are really bumping and things are going well?
Yeah. Oh, man. I mean, that just like takes me back to like certain races, because that is it's a beautifully terrifying moment in the race of just like, it's just a matter of, wow, I feel like this might actually work out the way I want it to, because the amount of times I've told myself I could do certain things and it didn't work out is plenty, right? I've lost a lot more races than I've won, but those few moments where you're like, wow, I like truly think I can win this thing is terrifying, because one of the scariest things about that moment is feeling like it's there and it like just slipping between your fingers. You know what I mean? Like not capturing it when it's there. So, which I totally understand is a moment of like, I have to act right now, where you just go fight or flight. And then, you know, ultimately make irrational decisions in terms of racing tactics or whatever sport you're playing. So, honestly, that was something I had a really hard time with for a lot of my career. I was the guy that went too early and paid for it, and you know, would have people come by me on the final home stretch. So experience was a huge part of that, just staying patient and understanding like, okay, the last person to react in this environment is usually the one who ends up coming away with the win. So it was just so much practice, just accepting that moment of like, okay, I'm here, I've got a shot, just wait until the moment is right. And that still doesn't guarantee it's going to work out, but it at least sets you up with the best shot. And then the last thing I'll add to that, this is kind of the habit I got into my last year of college and onwards, where I kind of had the best racing streak of my career. I changed my mindset from that point, because I realized that I couldn't ever determine or predict whether I was going to win a race or not. You have no idea. And that takes in considerations that are out of your control, right? You can't predict how your competitors are going to act on the day. So what I started doing was, instead of focusing on winning the race, I would focus on just managing my decisions so that I presented myself with an opportunity to win. And then from that point on, it was just instincts and you see what happens. So now in a 10K, I would focus on, okay, get to the last lap with the lead group. And if you do that, you have a chance to win. And to me, setting up yourself with the opportunity to win is the best way to manage something that feels a lot more within your control. Because if you're there and the opportunity is there, those variables that you don't know, what you don't know yet, will all come together and all ultimately determine whether, you know, you win or lose. So that's kind of my way of managing of it, is just get to a point where you give yourself a chance. Don't let yourself get out of it early. And then over the last lap, that's where it's all going to unfold. And you're going to see like how ready you really are for an opportunity like that. I think there's a really big and important difference between saying I can win and I will win, right? Anybody that says they will win, they really don't know. You know, and it's definitely a great confidence booster, and I'm sure it makes people feel good about themselves. But you know, it might come true and it might not. And to me, understanding that distinction and can really be helpful in terms of taking advantage of an opportunity where someone else might think they have it in the bag.
Right. Right. You know what the unfortunate part is in this whole conversation is, I'm learning all this incredible these incredible mental tactics and tools from an incredible and successful runner, yet I don't think it's going to help my running at all. I'm starting to realize that now.
Yeah, that's all right. You know, it's funny when I talk to people who are either like new into running or just started and they ask me for advice on how to get better. It's interesting because from someone of my perspective, who's been doing it for a long time, expect me to give them a lot of like a pump up speech of like, okay, no, you just got to get through it. And honestly, my number one advice to most people is that you're probably running too fast. Like if you feel terrible halfway through your run and the last half is miserable, then your run is too fast. And there's a certain training style where that's important to make your body hurt. But if you're trying to run every single day, I feel like you should finish one run feeling like, okay, I could do that every day for the rest of this week. And if you don't feel that way, it's really hard to keep that streak alive. So it's definitely a focus on sustainability because that's how you're going to get better over time.
Right, right. Well, that's something I needed to hear.
Yeah, you may not believe it, but I'm telling you to slow down.
Okay. Not what I thought I would hear from you, but that no. I appreciate that advice. I'm curious then for you as a professional and in your races, like what percentage of that race would you be in that zone?
Racing is interesting because the visual I would paint is that the energy level is slowly depleting, right? Odds are in most cases, the way the race goes is it's slowly going to hurt more and more and more until you're in that last, you know, 10% where you're like starting to, your vision is getting a little funky and, you know, you really start questioning things. So in my best, I would say that type of feeling is probably no more than 600 meters to go in the race in the 10K. So 10,000 meters, the first 5K is fast and relatively uncomfortable. The next 2.5K are heating up, but feel sustainable. And then that last, you know, I guess I'm at what, 7.5K now. So I would say maybe another 2K is getting pretty hard. And then the last 500 meters is like, okay, I'm all out now. I'm like really hurting. So it's pretty interesting, but it says a lot about how your performance usually is. Some people can fight from way further out and be okay, but that's a pretty tough way to run.
And how do you stay? Do you
it's
have
all
any
about preparation?
Right. Exactly. Exactly. I'm curious. Do you have, I don't want to go on textbook-esque or scientific, you know, verbiage, because I love your explanation of things 100 times more. But do you have any approach that when you know you're getting to that point that you stay out of your own head? Do you have triggers? Do you have, because you said, you know, focus, you said at points, if that comes into your mind, you're like, focus on the task at hand.
Yeah. I would say a lot of it is just, I would say my number one approach that comes to mind right now is just get one more lap. And like basically just, you have a big chunk of a goal and you just make it smaller. It's nothing too crazy or too complicated, but I think it's pretty powerful. So if you are running a 10K, there's 25 laps. That's what's on the lap counter, which is very intimidating, right? To think you're going to run around the track 25 times and the first one hurts a little bit, then it's not fun to see 24 to go. So to me, I break it up. I'm like, okay, first 15 laps, I'm not even looking at the counter. So I run 15 laps-ish. Then I look at the counter to make sure, you know, it's not a lap to go and I haven't been paying attention. So roughly 15 laps, I'll look at the counter and then I'll count down to 5 laps to go. And then the last boss, like, okay, just get one more. Okay, just get one more. Okay, there's only 2 laps to go. One more until one more. And then now it's like kicking time. So it's a lot about, for me, like mentally constructing it in a way that I can actually be like, okay, I can do, you know, I trick myself basically, right? Like I can do 10, 10, and 5, but I can't do 25. That's basically what you're saying, right? So that to me is something that's very helpful is breaking it into smaller chunks.
That's cool. That's really cool. Again, all this is so relative to so many other things outside of running. What is something you've experienced in your sport that you've maybe that's been an epiphany? Is there anything at all? And you can take this question wherever you'd like. Is there anything that's your sport specifically has taught you? What long distance training has taught you? What this sport has done to change your life? Is there anything along those lines?
Oh, I mean, there probably is a million, to be honest. I try to think of everything in terms of running. If I ever want to truly be able to relate to something, the same way you're doing here, if I wanted to talk hockey with you or sport with someone else that played at a way more competitive level than I ever have, I try to bring it in terms of running, in terms of like people in the corporate world. I always try to bring things back to running because that's how I truly understand. That's an area where I feel credible to say like, okay, this is something I'm very good at and I know what makes me good. In some ways, therefore, if I can apply that to other areas, maybe I can make sense of why someone's really good at, investing or economics or, math, how can I figure that out? But, so I would say specifically, sustainability is like, to me, the number one thing that comes to my mind. How I started this conversation, I grew up thinking that, more is more, it's, if I work harder, I'm going to get better and progress is linear. It would like all these things that just got me into more trouble, the better I got at my sport and learning like, okay, there's a limit to how capable I am of bringing a certain amount out of my body on a daily basis and a balance of like, okay, this is enough that I'm getting everything I need done, but it's not too much that it's going to affect my long-term development. And I would say that's something I can apply to a lot of different areas. So that would be the biggest thing. And I think that also talked about is that success is not certain. Take on other challenges in my life, just understanding like what I'm really getting myself into, saying, being content, trying basically that like, if I take on a challenge, I know that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to go exactly how I want, but I can be satisfied with the attempt and appreciate the process of any sort of endeavor like that.
I love that because it contradicts the common narrative that if you don't have the approach that you're going to just eat anything in your path and you're the best. And like you said, there's a difference between I can and I will win. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like your narrative and your approach is different than the Hollywood and classic sports psychologist approach where you have to believe that you're going to be the best or you never will. And you have to be willing to push harder than the next person beside you at all times. And I mean, it sells in Hollywood and I think it's good it's good in a motivational video, but to me that you haven't done that. You had a different approach. You actually were willing to accept I may not win, yet you were an NCAA champion, which is absolutely outstanding.
Yeah. It's something I've definitely thought about a lot and, a lot of things I believe in to make people successful in certain ways definitely aren't, they're not super sexy, it's not the, grind at all costs attitude that, that is, I think related to more like instant gratification, right? I think that type of stuff gives you people spurts when they need it, which is also important. I watch things to get me motivated. It doesn't mean like, I do think there is a place for, someone, a little bit of tough love or telling you to, picking you up when you're down. Like there are moments where that's important, but I definitely don't, to me, it's definitely not the way I would ever define, where my success derives from. And, I know other people have different styles that work from leadership roles and coaching. But for me, I think, the moments where I've been able to just play the long game, accept where I'm at, tailor progress accordingly. And I think that's where I've really gotten the best out of myself with more of a snowball effect rather than just like, I'm going to go as hard as I can today. I'm going to stay up all night going harder and then wake up and do it all again. Like that to me just doesn't seem realistic, and that's an exaggeration, of course, but that sort of side of things.
And now I want to cross over a little bit from your sport and what you've learned more anecdotally. into what you've learned academically and potentially a field of social work and the, I'm sure, the sociology and psychological courses you took to earn that. What is your approach to the mental side of performance, I'd say, and the mental side of wellness, just general wellness? And I know I've kind of already given you a precursor of my opinion on this topic, but I wonder what your approach is and if you see similarities and differences.
Yeah, it was definitely a fascinating experience for me to see, you know, I think, so if we talk about the stigma of mental health in general, if we start there, let's say people not feeling entirely comfortable going to see a therapist. And in the sports industry, that's definitely an area where some people are not comfortable with and, you know, I think has been changing. But I in college, that was the first time I noticed athletes being like, okay, if I may not see a therapist, but if I'm seeing a sports psychologist, like I'm comfortable doing that. You know what I mean? And it was interesting to, and I, you know, I was probably one of those athletes myself. And then you go into these social work classes and you start learning about, you know, interpersonal practice and therapy and clinical social work. And you're like, this is stuff like, this is sports psychology, right? Like this is what we were talking about. So, you know, and I do know your opinion on this and I'm not trying to just like feed into it, but like they are very connected, right? And, it's very interesting. And I think it's useful to know that like in ways that they're connected, I think you can encourage people's comfort level, actually accessing resources, either they don't think they need or they could benefit from. So yeah, I think it was pretty cool being at a place like University of Michigan where we definitely prioritize mental health quite a bit. And that was pretty cool. Well, I honestly, like, full disclosure, I don't think I used the resources as often as I could have and should have. I actually didn't use sports psychology as much as I wish I did now. But I guess I've gone on a little bit of a tangent here, but I do think they're valuable resources. And in my social work classes, it became clear that, you know, they're founded by the same, they're derived from the same topics of psychology, you know?
I appreciate that. I mean, that's kind of what I'm trying to get out in a lot of the presentations I do. I think that's so valuable, you know, from a performance side. We're more than willing to go get the help when it comes to improving performance in sport. It's like, yeah, that's totally normal. I'm told. And then as soon as it's performance in life because of anxiety or depression and we have to go see a counselor, now it's this completely different thing. When, as you just said, and I know it as well, it's like, it's very, very similar. And I like that you even said derives from the same textbooks and the same people. So.
Yeah. And I'll tell you a funny story anecdotally. My final summer when I, you know, of college, where things were on a roll and I was racing well, and without even realizing it, sometimes in the middle of my speeches, I was using social work terms like to these kids that like I learned in my classes, and I was like, oh, that's pretty funny that, like, you know, here I am talking to a bunch of, you know, kids about athletics, and I'm like pulling these terms from another area in my life. So it was funny kind of just seeing them connect in that way.
I love that. Now, as a professional athlete, what's the plan? How does professional running work? How many races are you doing? What's your schedule like on the day to day?
Yeah, I get this question a lot because, you know, professional running is not the NHL or the NBA or the NFL, you know? So a lot of people don't know much about how it works or what we do. But, you know, my training's changed because I've joined a new group. So I'm on a professional contract with Reebok. We've got a group here in Virginia where I train with them. Obviously during these times with COVID, a lot of modifications to our training environment, let alone the entire sport. So there's no upcoming races at the moment. I've just been training lots, but basically the structure of my week is, this is how, and this is kind of the typical weekly structure of distance runners. You have two really high intensity workouts, 4 days of recovery runs, and one long run, which is just the longest effort of the week and pretty intense as well. So strangely enough, a lot of the week is focused on recovery in our sport. But I run probably between 85 and 90 miles a week. Train full time. I compete full time. When racing is happening, I'll compete nationally, internationally. The whole pursuit is to be on the Olympic team for Team Canada. That's the main objective. And again, with COVID, that's been postponed till next year. But yeah, that's it right now. So I've been living here in the U.S. just full-time training. I live with my girlfriend and my dog. So, you know, I got lots going on outside of running too, which is nice. More recently, I'm trying to get a little bit more involved in, you know, the running community and connecting with other groups as soon as we're over this COVID hump. So that's basically in life right now, but it's definitely something I want to do for a long time and basically see how far I can take this. So being able to continue to progress in college and really see like how fast I can drop my times and, you know, how much I can really bring out of myself while getting a ton of support and resources to allow me to do that has been pretty cool.
I, and I'm sure other listeners, wish you the absolute best and also in your hunt for the Olympics. I'm so humbled to be able to have this conversation and appreciate your insights so much. I won't be sending you any of my Strava times for my runs, but just know I will be adopting a lot of your insight and tactics.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. You know, not all interviews go this way and ask these type of questions. So it was a real privilege to, you know, talk about these ideas and philosophies in all sports, I would say, but in my particular experience.
That brings us to the end of another Heroic Minds podcast. I want to thank you so much for listening and continuing to support the podcast. If you're enjoying these episodes, feel free to leave a positive review on whatever platform it is you use to listen. And more importantly, feel free to send me an email. My email is always in the description of these episodes. If you want to take a conversation further, discuss something, anything to get something off your chest, I'm always an ear to listen or an email away. So feel free to send me an email. I always enjoy having conversations with listeners from all over. I'm Ben Finelli. This is the Heroic Minds podcast. We'll talk again soon.